world's greatest modern punk rock band have barged their way into the Triple M studios to play their favourite punk rock acts of all time. First, we tried to fight them off. Then we decided, you know what, this will actually sound pretty good.
Triple M is bringing us back.
This is a hostile, not really.
Well, you know.
Punk rock takeover, Green Day style.
The DJ Dow.
On Triple M.
It's Becco on Triple M. I'm in LA. Green Day, Billy Joe, Trey Cool, Mike Dirnt. Great to have you guys here.
Wow, thanks for having us.
Glad to be here. Glad to be here. Mike Dirnt here.
You got your number one album, Right Around the World.
Yeah, it feels good. Number one. Yeah. What do you say, with two bullets?
Does it feel like a big weight off your shoulders?
We definitely feel it. I think the older you get, it's just like, or the longer you've been around, it's more of a feeling of gratitude. Just because it's like, I mean, we understand that not a lot of bands can make it past two records, let alone 12. So, excuse me. There's my gratitude coming out right there. So it's just great. And our fans rule, Idiot Nation. It's just amazing. And last night they were in full force. So it's great.
How long has it been? Has it been almost 30 years since the very first gig?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I think the first gig that we ever did was, right now, I think it was 29 years ago, October 17th at Rod's Hickory Pit. And that's where my mom worked, in a 24-hour diner, and they had a room in the back. Like, and so we were able to play it.
There's got to be something to be able to last that long, because bands come and go. You see them coming.
Coffee works. We love playing music together. You know, we love rock and roll. We love playing music together. And this is it's a great journey that we've been on. And I don't want to see, we got a lot more to say. So it's a great way to live.
The camaraderie, or the connection that the fans see on stage when we're playing together, we feel that too. So that definitely keeps you going, motivates you to, you know, play with your friends and keep kicking ass.
Tell us about the high school years when you guys met.
Well, I always like to say I've been in the same high school band since for the last 29 years. So I think, me and Mike met when in the fifth grade. I think we were about 10 years old. And we kind of were kindred spirits, and how much we love music and like being goofy and cracking sick jokes. And, you know, like, I think we had a book between us. It was like the gross joke book. And it's like, that was sort of almost like where our punk rockness started, with just these vulgar books of bad jokes. And then we used to make like tapes together, where we acted like DJs and did these stupid, like, just taking lyrics from rock records and turning them around and coming up with like some kind of vulgar commentary. And then we started kind of playing hard rock and heavy metal. And the first, like, I think right around, it was the seventh grade, we got together and we learned some early Def Leppard and Ozzy and Van Halen and Kiss. And then we did that for through middle school. And then I think right around high school is when we both started getting into punk and Gilman Street, and the bands that were coming out of there. It was like Crimp Shrine and Operation Ivy. But before that, we were started playing music. And I think one of our biggest influences at the time was Husker Du and The Replacements and 7 Seconds. And so, and we didn't really know there was any other bands, right? Because, like, literally, we're probably the only two punk rock kids in our whole town. I mean, that's how punk was back then. It was like, it was, if you were in the suburbs and you grew up in a really, really small town, there was no one around that had a punk record collection. So, you know, me and him and a couple of other friends sort of gathered tapes and started going to Gilman Street, where we found other bands that kind of sounded like us. Kindred spirits ring. So it's great.
Yeah, almost 30 years later.
That was very accurate. What were we, 15, 16 when we met Trey?
We were about 16, and Trey was in a band. I mean, Trey's been playing in a punk band since he was 12, called the Lookouts. And we met, and we used to go see him play at Gilman before we could even get a gig there. So Trey, and that we had a different drummer before, John Kiffmeyer, and then he left to go to high school after that, or high school. He left to go to college, and high school was my college. But and then so that's when Trey came in, and I think it was late summer 1990. And Trey was 17 and been in a band. Me and Mike were 18. We've been together ever since.
Yeah. That was the eternal, upgrade.
Let's move on to the album. Number one, multiple times. And this is the first album. What, 16 years where you actually self-produced it?
Yeah. I think that this is the most independent record we've ever made. I think, probably since Kerplunk, that we've had this sort of, it was just me, Mike, and Trey, and an engineer, and just doing the whole things ourselves.
Explain for all those back in Australia who don't hear about the US politics and all that sort of stuff. Explain the anger and the of getting behind this album.
I don't know if it's anger; it's more confusion. I think America is in sort of this sort of brewing culture war that's going on, and. Part of that culture war is gun violence and mass shootings, and that's like, it's interesting to me, and it kind of blows my mind to sort of see how it goes on these manifestos that go on social media, and people are kind of living out their lives in this like violent way, the kind of like how all these different shootings have happened, and then but then there's like also like the NRA. That want to keep, you know, they have this sick ideology that comes along with the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. And so it's like, you know, it's like we end up in this thing, especially with Trump right now, where it's not just they're turning it into white versus black and nationalism against immigration. And even to a point where now you're seeing it gets man versus woman, literally. So it's I think that our country is headed to somewhere that's a bit more progressive, and it's just like this is like the fallout right now with this election.
The album is one of the greatest punk rock albums in a very, very, very long time.
And, and
you must have just wrapped it up, saved it, and just gone, that's pretty cool, gotta be proud of that.
I'm just glad that you know, it sounds great. It's got energy that we're going after. We did it ourselves, and it's out. Sitting on that record for the last couple of months has been torturous. It's just good to share it and be able to play it live, and it's a big relief. Popping a big old zit.
Actually, I'll ask Billy about your mum. Your mum was there last night, and that was pretty cool to see her up on the balcony, and... can you tell me about the story about how she bought you your first guitar?
Yeah, it was a guitar that belonged to my guitar teacher at the time. His name was George Cole. He was an amazing musician. And he brought the guitar in and he asked me, he's like, I'm thinking about selling this. And I just loved it. She kind of came up with $300 just basically through her tips and whatnot. And she bought me the guitar. So, and I've been playing it every show ever since for, you know, what, how old am I now? You know, 34 years ago. So,
you know, the crazy thing is, you know, guitars are way cheaper now, but that is to this day. I mean, that is a kick-ass guitar for $300. Really, he did him a solid, sold him a really, I mean, blue is a very special guitar no matter where it's at on the planet. So, and he's got his money's worth. She's gotten her money's worth out of it because you only played like 400 million gigs on it.
And the guitar case that came with it was responsible for printing hundreds of early Green Day t-shirts when we were silk screening them ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
In like people's backyards and stuff.